Everything he does for Klali Yisrael, which we need a full hour and a half to thank him for, and even that Ilu Filu Mother Shira Kayam we wouldn't be able to do. But at least what he does for the boys in Yeshivat HaKotel each year when he comes and over the summers in his program, and I encourage people to consider the Keli Beis Medrash that he runs. Don't consider the Keli Beis Medrash unless you have a tent. And everything he does for our alumni in YU, in the learning, both in the undergraduate and the graduate. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you so much.
And enjoy, everyone.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Mr. Aragon. Thank you for taking the trouble to come all the way up here, and Shushab Dovi as well. We're going to talk a little bit in halacha, yeah? Halacha? And then we'll do some question and answer. So talking in halacha, maybe we'll do it a little bit differently. Guys, how are we going to do this? Last three questions, yeah? I think last three questions. What happens to your hair? What's the deal? Your parents okay with this? Right, we have to do something about that. Okay. Look, all right. Stuff happened to me also. So. All right. I'll share with you three halachic shilas that I've gotten. Some of them recently, some of them not so recently. And you'll tell me which one you want to talk about. And then after we finish talking about that, we could do a question and answer session. Sounds good? Yeah? Agreed? Okay. So here is shila. Well, here's what I've been doing lately. Halacha is amazing. It's amazing for many, many reasons. First of all, it's the guidebook that through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us how he wants us to live our lives. But it's also amazing because it covers not only the big things. You know, there are certain things that everybody knows they need a rabbi for. You know, there's a wedding, a funeral, whatever. You know, like life cycle events. You know, you need a rabbi for that. But Halacha tells us how to live our lives even on the tiniest things. And all you need to do is you need to get yourself a new pair of glasses. You need Halacha glasses. You need to be able to look at the world around you through the prism of Halacha, through the prism of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you. And then you'll see it everywhere. Meaning, yeah, Amazon sends you the same thing twice. Now it's not just, oh, cool, I got two things. It's, what does Hashem want me to do with this second thing that I don't need? Is it mine? Am I allowed to keep it? Right, all of these little things that happen in life. So I'd like to share with you three shilas. One of them deals with something very, very tiny. One of them deals with something very, very big. And one of them deals with something very, very unusual. Okay, so between those, you'll tell me which one you want to talk about. So here is the one that deals with something ostensibly very, very tiny. I got an email from a young lady in Stern College. Familiar, Stern College? Right? Okay. You'll become familiar. You'll have to pick up some dates from there probably at some point. So I got an email from a young lady at Stern College, very from young lady apparently, and she writes as follows. Hi, Rabbi Leibowitz. I had a question that came up this week that I was hoping you could help with. Stern has an open salad bar. Kamuvan, right? In Camp Cayley, there's boys' month, there's girls' month. In boys' month, they like throw you a couple of pieces of lettuce, and then it's just like beef and like, you know. And in girls' month, it's like froyo and a salad bar, you know, for every meal. So Stern has an open salad bar. That was my own. I veered off the text here for a second. Stern has an open salad bar where girls can fill a container and pay by weight of the salad, that is, right? Okay. This week, when I was taking some salad, a tomato fell out of the spoon onto the counter. Without thinking, I said a bracha out loud. She picked up the tomato and said a bracha out loud. But before I put the tomato in my mouth, I realized I hadn't yet paid for the tomato. It hadn't yet been weighed with the rest of my salad. So now what do I do? It's probably stealing to eat the tomato because it wasn't paid for. Would it be better to eat the tomato, possibly stealing, or not eat the tomato after I said the bracha? So possibly, bracha levatala. Something as small as one of those little cut-up pieces of tomato at a salad bar, it's a serious halachic shayla. Right? A serious halachic shayla. So that is shayla number one. That's the something small. Next, something big. The something big relates not only to a shayla halach lemaisa. It relates to Hanukkah, it relates to the Parshas HaShavuot that we've been reading lately. But here's the something big. This goes back a number of years. My first year ever teaching in DRS. I taught in DRS. It's a boys' high school in the Five Towns, so it's not familiar. I taught there for 18 years. So my first year teaching in DRS, I had a student who was, now that I think, he was 5 years younger than me. Meaning I was 22, he was 17. You know, but he was a student of mine in DRS. And he asked me the following question. He had grown up, he got married, he had a healthy child. And then his wife was expecting a second child. And while they were expecting the second child, they went for a doctor's appointment. And the doctor said, you know, I know that before you got married, you did some sort of genetic screening, which everyone should know that you should do before you get married in order to make sure that you're not both carriers of the same, you know, likely Ashkenazi genetic disease. Ashkenazi Jews have like a lot of doozies. We have a lot of really wonderful genetic diseases that we tend to carry. That's what happens when you have generations of marrying first cousins, you know, no diversification of the gene pool. Really good idea, by the way, for an Ashkenazi to marry a Sephardi or vice versa, a little diversification. It'll cause other complications, but for the most part, it's a really good idea. So this guy, it was told by the doctor, of course you did your basic genetic testing through an organization called Dar Yisharim. Dar Yisharim tests to see that you're not carriers of a disease called Tay-Sachs. And they have like five or six other diseases they check for as well. Anyone know what Tay-Sachs is? It's this really horrible disease. It was known as like a Jewish illness. And if a baby had Tay-Sachs, the baby would probably die between the ages of 2 and 3. And their whole life would be miserable, essentially. So all the abortion shilas that, you know, when the Tzitz Eliezer was famously matir abortion, and Meishel Dritzicha, all that, the hechrich for it was Tay-Sachs. Right? I mean, that's why people needed abortions, because they discovered that they were carrying a Tay-Sachs baby. So that was the... So of course they got tested for Tay-Sachs, but they didn't get tested for everything. And there are like 150, there's a panel of like 150 diseases they could have that's helpful to know before the baby is born. So they listened to the doctor and they went, while the wife was pregnant, they went and they got tested for the full 150, the full panel of potential diseases. Turns out, and they don't know how this happened, and Dar Yisharim hates when I say this. Dar Yisharim is an amazing organization. They stopped Tay-Sachs in the world, but this is the story that happened. Turns out they were both carriers of Tay-Sachs. We're not sure how that happened, but that it was missed on the first test. But they're both carriers of Tay-Sachs, which means, for those, anyone ever take bio, right? What are the chances that the baby that's in the womb has Tay-Sachs?
35%.
So it's 1 in 4, I think, is the, right? I mean, both parents are carriers. So it's it's the box, yeah. Right? So it's 1 in 4. Thank you, Ruben. So it's 1 in 4, which means that there's 1 in 4 chance the baby has Tay-Sachs, which is terrible. So what's the first thing you do? You test the fetus. So how do they test the fetus? They do a thing called an amniocentesis, and they test the fetus. So this was back about 10 years ago. And they tested the fetus on a Wednesday. And, you know, nowadays we're used to, like, instant results, you know, like immediately, as soon as you, right? I mean, you know, when I took the LSAT, for example, I was supposed to go to law school at some point in my life. I took the LSAT. Then you wait 3 weeks for the results to come in snail mail. And, like, you know, nowadays, I think when you finish the LSAT, you click submit, and then it pops the score right out at you. It's like, you know, it's a totally different world. But even in 2012... They did this test on Wednesday. They're going to find out the results of the test the following Monday. 5 days of Ni'ilu of Yom HaKippurim. It's 5 days where they have to wait to find out the results of this test. It's pretty significant. So what's the Shaila? What's the Shaila? I mean, that stinks, okay? What's the Shaila, right?
Can they daven for not to be, not that Tay-Sachs?
Very good. So Hilchus Tefila Shaila. Can they daven that the baby shouldn't have Tay-Sachs? Right? Is that something that's mutar to daven for? Why would it be also to daven for that?
It's
already been decided. The baby either does or doesn't. So that might be a Tefila Shaf. So that is Shaila number two. So that's the something big. And then something strange. What did I say? Something unusual. Yeah, strange is insulting. Okay, something unusual. So I got a call of about a month ago from a young 20-year-old Kala. We'll call her Atara because her name is Atara and it's nice to call people by their names. So Atara calls me up and she told me that she's engaged to a guy from my shul, from North Woodmere. She was, now they're married already, thank God. And you guys know who it is. So she called me up and she said... She happens to be, she had told me in the previous conversation, she happens to be a very talented makeup artist. It's like a thing. Like, on the day of your wedding, God willing, when you guys get married, you will have nothing to do all day. Your Kala will be busy all day. She's got, like, at 4 a.m., makeup starts. And then, you know, and then there's pictures and whatever, and, like, they need, like, 3 shots of you. But, you know, of the Kala, you know, it's like, so they bring these makeup people to the wedding, like, hours and hours before the wedding to put makeup on the Kala and the Kala's mother and the Chassan's mother and the sisters and the bridesmaids and whatever. You know, so the Atara was booked to do 4 faces. That's the language they use in the biz. 4 faces, right? She was booked for 4 faces. So she was told, you're going to do the Kala's mother, the Kala's sister, and 2 bridesmaids. That's what she was booked to do. So Atara shows up to the wedding. She does the Kala's mother. She does the Kala's sister. She does 1 bridesmaid. And then they say, and now it's Shoshana's turn. She's like, okay, where's Shoshana? And in walks what appears to be a man in a dress. And he says, I'm Shoshana. And Atara's like, you're Shoshana? You know, she's a little surprised. And Shoshana sits down to get Shoshana's makeup done. So Atara didn't know what to do. She was a little flustered. She wasn't expecting this. This was a little... So she did it. She did the makeup. And apparently Shoshana thought that Atara did an amazing job. Shoshana never felt so pretty in Shoshana's entire life. So Shoshana said, you know, can I take your number? Because you're amazing. You're like a wizard, you know? I'd love to have your number. So Atara was a little freaked out, and afterwards she called me up and she said, did I do something wrong? I feel guilty. Did I do something wrong by putting makeup on Shoshana? And what do I do when Shoshana calls next time? Because it sounded like Shoshana was being sincere when Shoshana said that Shoshana never felt so pretty in Shoshana's entire life. I'm just afraid. I don't know. I don't know. But that was the unusual Shaila. Okay, so we have a Shaila about something small, something big, the fallen tomato, the tefillah about the tesax, and the makeup for Shoshana. That's enough Shailas to choose from? Yeah? Okay, all those who want to... So think which one you want to vote for, and then we're going to do a vote, okay? So all those who want to talk about the fallen tomato. Oh, wow, that's the most votes the fallen tomato ever got. Yeah, Shukaya, good. It's a great Shaila, by the way, the fallen tomato Shaila. Why is it a great Shaila? There are a lot of permutations of it. Like, what happens if you had a flesh of lunch? And then, like, an hour later, someone gives you milk chocolate, and you're like, ooh, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Shehakol Yevid Baro. And then, like, you're about to put it in your mouth, and you realize, I had a flesh of lunch an hour ago. Right? What do you do? So that's a variation of that Shaila.
Another one you spoke about a couple of years ago, about the Asar B'Teves Shaila.
Ah, very good. Wow, Rav Dovi's on it. Yeah. So the Rabbi Kamenetsky, did I mention who it was?
Did not mention.
So Rabbi Kamenetsky Shlita, the Rosh Yeshiva of Help, he gives a shiur on Friday mornings to Balabatim in Parshas HaShavua, and one year Asar B'Teves was on Friday, and he was giving the shiur. And he started like coughing and choking a little bit. So one of the, you know, the Balabatim have a lot of respect for him. So one of the guys ran out, got a cup of water, and brought it to him. And if you've ever heard of Rabbi Kamenetsky visited a kotel?
He will in January. He's going to come back.
Okay. So if you've ever heard Rabbi Kamenetsky, when he's teaching Torah, he is a man on a mission. There is the Torah, there is him, there are the Talmidim, and there is nothing else in the world. You know, so he was teaching Torah, he was totally into it. They hand him a cup of water, he says, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Shehakol Yevid Baro. He's about to drink it, and they say, Asar B'Teves. You know, it's a fast day. So what do you do? So that day, he came over to me. I was still teaching in DRS at the time. He came over to me with a note, because he doesn't talk in his tefillah. He doesn't talk during davening. So he came over with a note describing exactly what happened. And on the top, it said, 10-minute halacha, ? You know, like, I should get a share on it. So we did. okay, that's a fallen tomato. So we have a few votes for fallen tomato. Anyone who wants to talk about tefillah shav, the tefillah issue, the tesax issue? Okay, good. Anyone want to talk about Shoshana? Pretty even vote. Which one should I talk about?
It's up to you. Definitely not up to me.
Yeah, when I was in Tara Shragar, Rabbi David was the deciding vote, so the local Rav is the deciding.
Whatever Achri Rav Lahantos.
I don't know. Was anyone counting?
The fallen tomato again, just the cans?
What's that poll? That's what we should have done.
It's a lot more hands, okay.
Yeah, okay, fallen tomato. Okay, it's a good sugya. Okay, so what do we have to deal with over here with, as far as the fall of tomato is concerned? So first thing you have to deal with is how bad is bracha levatala. Then you have to deal with how bad is stealing, or is this really stealing? And then you have to deal with what you often have to deal with in terms of answering Shalos Halacha L'maisa, which is there an Eitza? You know, with these kinds of Shilas where there's some sort of conflict, so, you know, it's always makes for an interesting Shiloh, because which halach is stronger? Like, which one wins? It's a conflict of some sort. But is there an Eitza? Is there a way to get out of it? Is there a way where you're not going to be in violation of either of those things? So that's where our minds should go in general. Whenever you get such a Shiloh, where is it this halach or that halach? The first place your mind should go is that's a false choice. That it doesn't necessarily have to be this or that. It might be a false choice. There might be a way that you can give an Eitza that's going to get out of the problem. So we'll have to keep that in the back of our minds as we go through the Shaila. But like we said, it is not a totally unique Shaila in the sense that bracha on food on a fast day, bracha on milchigs within 6 hours of fleshigs, bracha on food before Avdallah on Motzai Shabbos. Same thing, you're not allowed to eat before Avdallah on Motzai Shabbos. What if you said a bracha on food before Avdallah on Motzai Shabbos? So what do you do then? So the problem with bracha levatala, the Gemara tells us in bracha staf lamed gimel, that Rabbi Yochum Reish Lakish Ar Mitarvayu kalem mevarech bracha shenishvicha over mishum lo sisa. And if you say a bracha shein tzricha, it's a violation of lo sisa, that in a violation of a pasuk in the Torah. The implication is, simple reading of the Gemara, is it daraisa or is it rabbanan? Is it daraisa, right? The first thing you always have to ask in any halachic shayla is, are we dealing with is it daraisa, is it rabbanan, or a minhag? So it sounds from the Gemara that it's is it daraisa. However, that is not so pashut. The Rambam in the Chuvas of Rambam, Simon Pei Dalin, the Rambam Paskin's Bracha Levatala is in fact an Isser Midaraisa. However, Tosvos in Mesach Rosh Hashanah disagrees. Tosvos in Rosh Hashanah and the Rosh in Kiddushin, in the first parak of Kiddushin in Os Mem Tes, both say that the Pasuk is an Asmachta, and Losisa is only in the Bracha Sheinetzricha, or Bracha Levatala is only an Isser Drabanan. Now, there is an Isser of saying God's name in vain, but saying a bracha sheina tzricha or a bracha levatala is not saying God's name in vain. Saying God's name in vain is just stam. You like to say Hashem, you know, whatever. You just say, you blurt it out. So that's saying God's name in vain. But if you say like a very nice, powerful, meaningful sentence like, bear with me here, Baruch Ata Adonai, Eloheinu Melech Olam, Shakol Nehi B'Dvaro. And not drink water after it, right? If you do that without drinking water after it, you just said a very powerful, nice sentence, right? You said something really nice about Hashem. That's not Hashem's name in vain. You just said a great Shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Shakol B'Yabidvaro. That's how Rabbi Finder says, Shakol B'Yabidvaro. Rabbi Targum's brother-in-law, if you ever heard him speak. Okay, if you haven't heard him speak, you don't get it. But he always says a bracha, never shir. But that's a bracha. Shein tzricha is not an isser daraisa. It would only be an isser drabanan. Now the Russian Tosfos bring a raya from a Gemara in Brachas Tav Chaf Aleph, because Gemara says Safik Amar Emes V'Yatziv, Safik Lo Amar Choser V'Omer Emes V'Yatziv, My Taima Emes V'Yatziv Midoraisa. That if you're not sure if you said Emes V'Yatziv or not, say it again, because Emes V'Yatziv is daraisa. So apparently, bracha shein tzricha is midaraisa, so you can't put yourself into a suffix of daraisa when you repeat MS Vyatsiv, meaning that Brach Shein Sricha is only an Isser Midrabanan, and therefore it's not a violation of a suffix Isser daraisa to repeat MS Vyatsiv, right? Meaning, would it be a violation of an Isser daraisa to repeat the Bracha? That's the raya that they bring. How do we paskin Shulchan Aruch as Brach Shein Sricha Nisidar Raisa or Nisidar Abanan? So the Shulchan Aruch in Sim Reish Taz Vav Sev Vav Paskins Kalim Avarich Brach Shein Sricha Hareza Nose Shem Shemayim Lashav Vare Hu Kinishba Lashav. It's the same as a Shavuas Shav. Okay, now all you gotta know is what is a Shavua Shav? Is a Shavua Shav Dar Raisa or not? So let's say the implications like the Ram, Shavua Shav is Dar Raisa. So it sounds like it's an Issa Dar Raisa. It sounds from Shulchan Aruch we paskin that a bracha levatala is an Issa Dar Raisa. So now, just to know what we're dealing with over here, if this girl, I don't remember who sent me the email, I don't remember her name, but if this young lady from Stern were to not eat the tomato, she'll be in violation of bracha levatala on a daraisa, which is an isser on a daraisa, on daraisa level. Rav Vadi Yosef in Yabia Omer Chelik Ches or Chaim Simin Yotes, Rav Vadi writes that even if it were only a drabanan, it would be a very serious midrabanan. It's an isur chamur midrabanan. Rav Avadi in general, like maybe like part of his agenda, that people should stop saying so many brachos. Meaning, we know that Ashkenazi women, for example, recite brachos on mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Sephardi women typically do not recite brachos on mitzvah saseh shazman grama. It's also machlok between the Rambam and the Balei Hatosfos. So Rav Avadi has a number of shuvos where he gets very upset that he heard that there are some Sephardi women that learned from their evil Ashkenazi neighbors to say brachos on mitzvah shazman grama, and he was really unhappy about it. And he said even Ashkenazim probably shouldn't do it. That was a little much to say that, but he says even Ashkenazim maybe shouldn't do it. He was really, really unhappy about it. So Rav Avadia tries to like emphasize to us like how serious. Happens to be, you know, mitzvah shazman grama. How many are there that women are actually pater from? How many mitzvah shazman grama are women actually pater from? Five, six, right? That's the mice I always love to tell. Rabbi Sablovsky told me once. He asked his shir in yeshiva, how many mitzvah shazman grama do you think women are pater from? And one of the guys in the shir said, 1,000. He's like, okay, let's start again. There are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. Right? 248 of them are mitzvahs asay, right? Okay, so now, how many mitzvahs shazman grama are women pater from? So it's like 5 or 6, depending on your count, maybe 7. But there aren't that many. There are many more exceptions than there are the rule, right? There are many mitzvahs shazman grama that women are actually chayiv in. For example, you're learning Shabbos, so Kiddush, right? Kiddush is a mitzvah shazman grama, but women are chayiv in Kiddush because she yeshem b'shomer, yeshem b'zachar. What else?
Matzah.
Because yeshem b'al tochel chametz, yeshem b'kum achol matzah. But Neros Chanukah, afinay b'osaneis. Right? Megillah.
Kalkosos.
Yeah, but, meaning there are many. Right? There are a lot of exceptions, more exceptions than there are the rule. But Rav Avadia makes a big deal about brachos are a very, very important thing. The brachos are a very important thing. Now, his suggestion that it's a very serious derabanan is interesting because the Gemara quotes a pasuk associated with it. That's an indicator of the seriousness of it. Meaning, we often think of things as either darais or derabanan. So it's either very serious or derabanan kind of serious. But in reality, there are many levels within daraisas and many levels within derabanan. Prima Gadam has a sefer called Psicha Kolelas, which is basically his introduction to how to learn Torah, how to learn Halacha, and in his instruction to his commentary in the Shulchan Aruch. So in the Psicha Kolelas, he goes through all the different levels of Daraisas. For example, the Daraisa that's Mefurish Bekra, that's explicit in the Pasuk, is on an entirely different level, a higher level, than a Daraisa that's only learned out from the Midrash Shatar and Drashas Ben, which in turn is on a higher level than a Daraisa that's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. That's how Prima Gadam writes. That's why the Taz writes, Taz Hayadua, the Taz writes in several places that if you have an explicit pasuk for something, Mefurish Bekra, the Rabbanan are not allowed to make a din that tells you not to do it. Meaning the Rabbanan are allowed to make a din, Lakhrad of Minatar Vashevi Alta said, tell you not to do a mitzvah, but not on something that's Mefurish Bekra, not on a consistent basis against that which is Mefurish Bekra. That's part of the rules, because it's so serious. Well, Drabbanans also have different levels. And a Drabbanan with an Asmachta is more serious than a Drabbanan without an Asmachta. It has to be taken more seriously. In fact, Rav Yosef Engel quotes in Likutei Ma'aril that Kol Heichad Itmar Midrabbanan Kura Asmachta Bialma, whenever it says Midrabbanan Kura Asmachta Bialma, Divade Takanta Drabbanan Hu, Veim Yotsu Ubatku Umatzalem Smach Mikra, it's a Din Drabbanan, they found a Pasuk to latch it onto. V'samchu divrayim alav. Why? Why do they have to find a pasuk if it's not really based on a pasuk? Kedei lahachzikam shiu svurim duhumi doraisa. Says Likutei Ma'aril, you know why they came up with a smachta? To fool you. Unless you think that something is only a din d'rabanan and be right about it, and then not take it as seriously, when the rabbanan wanted you to take something really seriously, they pretended it was a doraisa. This is like a common tactic that people use nowadays, right? Mashkichim in yeshivas. You can't do that. It's Yarek Val Yavar. Not everything's Yarek Val Yavar. There are three things that are Yarek Val Yavar, right? But everything becomes Yarek Val Yavar. You can't be a Tzioni. That's Yarek Val Yavar. You know, whatever. I don't think so. I don't think that's true. You know, so there are all sorts of, you know, people use words, but it doesn't really mean that, right? So so says the Likutei Ma'aril, mind blowing. Chazal fooled us. They would tell us something is a daraisa when it wasn't, and that's what we call a smachta. They tell you, oh, over mishum lo sisa. Oy vey, it's a violation of a seres dibros. No, it's not really, but they were fooling us. And then once we accepted it, once we accepted the din, because they told us it was a Doraisa, and we took it seriously, then they said, haha, joke's on you, you know, it's really only the Rabbanon, but now you're already too far in to back out, because Rova the Tzibur was already Mekabit. Right, that's how, so Rav Yosef Engel says, it can't be. He says, I must be one of the Talmidim was taking notes in the Maril Shir and was spacing out or something and just like made something up and wrote it. Like, it can't be. Lukut Maril wasn't written all by the Maril himself. It was written by Talmidim. So sometimes you always have to be a little more suspicious when a Sefer was written by notes of Talmidim. They say, Rav Lachman told us in Rav Yavna, Rav Naftali Trap, the Chidush HaGranat was written by notes of Talmidim. So they said, Naftali Trump was walking through the Beis Medrash in Radin, and he picked up one of his Talmidim's notebooks, upon which the Chiddush HaGranat was based, and he said, who said this? None of this looks even remotely familiar to me. So, but like any Achron, you have to read it and see if it makes sense. If it makes sense, you use it. If it doesn't make sense, you don't use it. Remarkably, just Agav, Kovitz Shiurim, Rav Elchanan Wasserman's Kovitz Shiurim, was not written by Rav Elchanan Wasserman. It was written from notebooks of Talmidim of Rav Elchanan Wasserman. How old were Rav Elchanan Wasserman's Talmidim in Baranovich? Rav Elchanan was running like what would be the equivalent of a high school or early high school. Meaning, once you were past 11th grade, you were out of Baranovich. So it was basically 13 to 16-year-olds. Every Beis Medrash in the world has a Kovitz Shiurim. Rashi Yeshiva, the biggest Rashi Yeshiva in the world, gives Shir Klali based on Diyukim and Kovitz Shiurim. It's a 13-year-old's notebook. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. He must have had great, great Talmidim. But because it's amazing. Rav Elchanan actually wrote his own Svarim, also his own Sefer Kovitz Ha'aros on the Rashba and Yevamos. And my brother always says, anything good in Kovitz Shiurim you can find in Kovitz Ha'aros also. Okay, maybe yeah, maybe not. I never learned through Kovitz Ha'aros cover to cover. But how did I get to Talmidim's notebooks? I don't remember. But back to our Shaila. So you have a very, very Chomedic Isser Rabbanon called Bracha Levatala. Now, what about, so that's on the one side. What's her other option? What's this girl's other option? I'm about to say Shoshana each time. This isn't Shoshana. This is a girl. What's her other option?
Stealing.
So how bad is stealing?
Pretty bad.
Okay, good. You got a good chinuch. So are you allowed to steal in order to avoid violating an avera? I mean, if your only way to avoid violating an avera is stealing, can you think of a hechitimsa other than this?
Lulav.
That's not violating avera. You're stealing in order to do a mitzvah. That's mitzvah baba avera. But what about like an avera? Losase is going to be violated unless you steal to protect you from that mitzvah losase. I don't know. Let's see. You're about to see something that you shouldn't see, and the only way to. No, it doesn't work. I don't know. Are you allowed to steal to avoid violating? You're not allowed to steal to avoid violating an avera. Can you steal with the intent to pay back in order to avoid violating an avera? Meaning this girl might go, she'll steal the tomato right now, and then she'll go to the register and she'll say, you know, here's an extra nickel. Or from what I understand about the cafeteria prices, here's an extra $5, right? Maybe so she'll, right? Can you steal in order to, with the intent to pay back afterwards? So, the Gemara Masechta Bava Metzia Daf Samach Aleph and Beis tells us Lo Tignov Al Menas LeMeichat, Lo Tignov Al Menas LeShayim Tashel LeKeifa. That sometimes a person might want to steal for the benefit of the victim. How do you benefit the victim by stealing? You steal so that you have a person, let's say, who's poor, and you want to give them tzedakah, but they're too proud; they won't accept any tzedakah from you. So you're thinking, how can I give them tzedakah? How can I take care of them? So you steal from them, so that basis mechayev you to pay kefel, so you pay back that plus the kefel, and now you give them tzedakah, and it was all under the ruse of stealing from them. Says Gemara, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to steal even when your intentions are the best of intentions in stealing. So clear indications, you can't steal no matter how good your intentions are. However, Achronim asked the following kasha. The Gemara Babasa Daf Tazayin Amar Aleph says, Darash Rava, May dechsiv birchas ovir alai tavo v'lev almana. I don't know, I have the word messed up here. Basically, the Gemara says that Eov would steal fields from Yisomim, he would improve the fields, and then he would return the fields. In the Eov Agarit, to the end of the first part of Bavasra, he would steal fields from Yisomim, he would improve the fields, he would, you know, they used to have a TV show like that. where they you leave the house and then people would sneak into your house and redo the whole thing, and then you come back and be like, ah, I can't believe my house. Sound familiar? Oh, you can admit it. You know, HGTV, right? You know what I'm talking about. So they yeah, okay, thank you. So they would, Eeyore would do that. But how are you allowed to do that? You're not allowed to steal even when you have the best of intentions, even when you're trying to improve the place. So the Maram Shif on Bab Metzia says that he dealt with this question in his Chidushim to Bab Basra, and therefore you should look there. Oh, amazing. So what you got to do is look at the Maram Shif on Bab Basra. We're missing the Maram Shif on Bab Basra. Like, we're missing several dots in the Maram Shif on Bab Basra. So that doesn't help us. In the Hagos of Rav Matzios Tarshon, it says that Eov only did this with non-Jews. He was mative to Yisomim, Yisomim, non-Jewish Yisomim. But he would never do it to Jewish Yisomim, because Konev Almanas Lameikan is mutter for non-Jews, not mutter for Jewish people. It's a fascinating chiddush. That comes up in different contexts as well. Stealing with the best of intentions in order to benefit the other party might be mutter for a non-Jew. Where did that come up? Oh, I remember. I had the father. I came across the father. There's a tshuva sefer called Shilas Uchuvos. Trying to remember the name of the posik. He was like a really out there kind of posik. He's the one that blew shofar on Shabbos in Yerushalayim. Remember this? I forgot his name. It will come to me at some point. But in that, I was looking through the sefer, and in that sefer, he had a shayla. There was a case where a guy had the only lulav in town. He had the only set of dalav minim in town, and every year he would share his dalav minim with everybody else in town. That's a nice thing to do. One year he got into a huge fight with the people in town, and he said, "Okay, I got a dalav minim. I'm not sharing it with anybody." The problem is, it's a mitzvah of lachem. Right, that it's gotta be yours. So how is it going to be yours if he's not giving it? He's not willing to share it with anybody. So one of the suggestions was to ask a guy to steal it from him, and then wait for Yeyush, and then do Shinui Rishus afterwards. He's not allowed to steal. No, but if you go to Nevel Menas Lameka, go to Nevel Menas Lahachzir, you go to Nevel Menas to do good things with it, you're allowed to do that. That's okay for a Nachri. It's only Yasser, meaning just like you're allowed to do it from a Nachri, Nachri's allowed to do it for you. That's creative. I would not recommend that, but that's the Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger. There it is, Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger. He was a very creative kind of person. Rav Elchanan, though, in Kovitz Shiurim, or one of Rav Elchanan's 13-year-old Talmidim, says that the Gemara assumes that Eov was not Jewish and Bnei Noach are not Muslim. This means the same idea. But if you assume that, it was a big question who Eov was and whether Eov himself was Jewish. Now, they probably can't sell it to anybody else once it's fallen on the counter. Meaning, here's this tomato, going back to the tomato now. Right? Once it's fallen on the counter, they probably can't just, like, you know, sell it to somebody else. What do? They clean off the counter. It goes in the garbage. So it may be like eating out of the garbage can of a restaurant, which, like, it's a pretty yeshivish thing to do. There used to be in the in Vaseret Mall, there used to be a KFC, kosher KFC, when I was your age, when I was in yeshiva. There used to be yeshiva guys from a yeshiva near the mall. they would hang out in the mall, waiting for families to come and eat KFC. And the bigger the family, the greater the chance that, like, there would be a kid that didn't finish his food. It would just pounce on it as soon as the family left and eat, like, leftovers from people's. So, like, you know, but that's, is that stealing? Is that stealing? It's hefker. They're just going to throw it in the garbage. So it could be that this tomato is already hefker once it's already fallen on the counter. Now, she dropped it on the counter, but she didn't drop it on the counter on purpose, and that's understood that that's the way it works. So it's very possible that it's not stealing at all for her to take it. It's also possible that they're not makbid on a dover muat, on something so tiny, there's a presumed mechila that they wouldn't be makbid about. You ever go to a froyo store? Again, you can admit it. They give you these sample size thingies, right? So why do they give you those samples? Because they assume you'll then buy the whole thing. That some of them you could tell like what problems they've had with the sample. only three samples per chazer. You know, like people there all day eating samples. You know, it's like a lot of times when you read rules of different institutions, you could see like what people tried to do like in advance based on what they wrote into the rule book. Dress code, but no furry hats. What? Why was someone wearing a furry hat to the DRS? You know, like whatever. Okay, so that's on that side of things. Now we have a potential Isser Chamor, Drabanan or Daraisa, likely Drabanan B'Chamor, of Bracha Levatala, versus potentially stealing, but potentially not, because maybe there's a presumed Mechila, maybe it was already after because it had fallen on the counter. Now, is there an Eitzah? Is there a way out of it? So what's the classic way out of a Bracha Levatala? That's the easy way out. That gets you out of all your problems. The Beis Yosef in Archaim Simreish Rav quotes Yerushalmi, that Rabbi Zreiko Amar Rabbi Zeira Bai, where is it? Amar Rabbi Tanchum Tzarech Lomar Baruch Shem Kol Machsol Yomad Shalol Laask Yer Shem Shemayim Levatala. That if you accidentally said a bracha, so you could say Baruch Shem Kol Machsol Yomad in order that you don't say Shem Shemayim Levatala. It's Paskin Shulchan Aruch Sim Reish Rav Sim Vav Natal Biyado Pri Liochlo. You have a pre, you're ready to eat it, ubirechalav, and you said a bracha, v'nafal miyado, and you dropped it, v'nevado nimas, and it became gross, it became disgusting. Tzaruch lachzer levarich, you gotta make a new bracha. Afal pishayo may also min lefanav yosak shavirichal rishon, even though you had more of it, but you had one in your hand. Remember the video of Rav Shechter eating the locust? Right? So what did he do? The guy offered him another one. Right, remember that video? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Right, he said a bracha on the locust, he dropped it, so the guy said, oh, here, take this one. He went like that, and he went and he picked up the one that he dropped and to eat. Why? Because you have to eat the one that you said the bracha on. You're not supposed to eat another one. You got to eat the one that you said a bracha on. He later told me, by the way, someone called me up, a rabbi from Brooklyn called me up. How could Rav Shechter eat a locust? There's no Masorah, this and that. I said, all right, he thinks that he has a Masorah, that as long as you ask a Teimani and they tell you that they have a Masorah, that's good enough. No, but the Aruch HaShulchan says, the guy was fighting with me. So I said, I'll ask Rav Shechter, you know, if you want me to ask. So Rav Shechter said, he said, anyway, it didn't taste like anything. I don't know if he was trying to say that it's not a problem with Achol Sasurus because it had no tam b'chlal. He said, anyway, it didn't taste like anything. He said, when Rav Machbud gave me one years ago, he fried it in oil. It was delicious. This one was like ashes. It was disgusting. It was like, apparently, he was not happy with Rabbi Slifkin's cooking of locust abilities. The Shulchan Aruch says so. You have fruit. You drop. You say broccoli. Drop it on the floor. Tzarech lomar baruch shem kol machzor lelaved al shotzi shem shemayim levatala. You got to say baruch shem kol machzor lelaved because you're motzi shem shemayim levatala. Wow. So how does that work? Meaning that seems like an easy solution. But it's so weird. Do we ever have that in any other halacha? That you do an Isser, and then you can just say magic words, and the Isser disappears. You go, you turn on a light in a room on Shabbos, and you say, V'karasal Shabbos Oneg. You know, like that. The Isser, we don't have like that. That doesn't work. You can't like make an Avera disappear. So how does that work? So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, HaTakana shel Baruch Shem Kol Machzor Lelaved al Brach Levatala lo nisba'er hatam. He says, I don't know. V'ulai, he only says ulai once. Mipnei shehotzi shem shamayim levatala, levichach tzarech lekabel alav ol malchus shamayim. That since you disrespected the shem Hashem by being mostly shem shamayim levatala, you want to just say to Hashem, sorry, no offense. You know, I really do respect the shem Hashem, and that's why I'm saying baruch shem kvod malchus levatala as a statement of my honor and reverence for the shem Hashem. So it doesn't really fix the Avera. It's just a way of demonstrating kavod for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, Tosfos in Brachos Daf Lamed Tes says, Baruch Shem Kol Machzor Lelaved, it's nachon to say it on a bracha levatala, but Tosfos implies it's still a bracha levatala. It doesn't change it. It's still a bracha levatala. It's just nachon to then say Baruch Shem Kol Machzor Lelaved to sort of repair your neshama a little bit from that Avera. But the implication is Baruch Shem Kol Machzor Lelaved is not a cure-all. It doesn't help. The Yerushalmi's lashon, though, is that you say Baruch Shem Kol Machzor Lelaved Shelo Lahaskir Shem Shemayim Levatala. In Shuvas Panim Iros, he says it does fix the Avera, takes away Bracha Levatala. L'may nafkamina, whether it takes away the bracha levatol or is just a nice gesture. So Chayyadim says you have to say it right away. But the Eish HaLavram Mibachach, or Avram Dov Mibachach, says that it's only a midas chasidus to say it right away, so that you don't forget to say it later on. Well, it could be that it depends on what it is. If it's just to repair your neshama, so then you can do whatever you want. But if it's in order to correct and fix the bracha levatol, maybe it needs to be b'tochkei de dibur of the bracha, and it needs to be immediate. Another nafkamina is whether you can say other nice praises of Hashem. What if you don't want to say Baruch Shem Kol Malchus Olam Ve'ed? You just say, Shem Hashem is so awesome. Does that work? Right? Meaning, it could be that if it's just about saying something nice about Hashem to fix your Hashem, anything would work. But if there's like a magic formula to fix the Baruch Levatel, maybe only the magic formula works. Another nafkamina is our Shaila. Right? Is this an Eitzah? Can she already said the Bracha Levatala. Can she just undo the Bracha Levatala? Erase the Bracha Levatala? So I asked around. I asked what people thought. And I got a few Eitzas. People suggested a few Eitzas. No, any Eitzas? What would you suggest? What would she do? Yeah?
Run and get a different thing from someone else. Eat that.
Oh, so borrow a tomato. Right? Meaning borrow another tomato, throw it in the salad. So that she could pay for an equal sized tomato, assuming that it's an exactly equal sized tomato, and that you could then take it back out of the salad and put it back in the thing, which I'm not sure you know what the etiquette is. Someone else suggested put it in her mouth, one chew, spit it back out. That way you'll have the whole tomato there. She'll have gotten some tomato juice. Now it will be replaced by some of her saliva. Just put it back out into the salad. It's also a good way to make sure none of your friends steal your salad. okay. That's an Eitzah, I guess. Question is, would that actually require a bracha? Would that save the bracha issue? If she didn't swallow it, she just took it in her mouth to be towing. So Pashtus is yes, because she's getting some of the juices also. Another possible Eitzah is just overpay by a nickel. Or another possibility, maybe just don't talk until after you pay. So she has the tomato, throw it in the salad, and just keep quiet until after you pay. Problem is, like, how long of a hefsek is acceptable? You know, that could be a long time until after you pay. So you have to be careful. The halacha from Rav Paskins, kol elu abrachot tzorek shelo yafsek bein bracha la'achila, and the Rama writes yoser mikdei dibur. Not too long. You're not really supposed to be mafsek between bracha and achila at all. So it's unclear what he means by yoser mikdei dibur. Is machlokes achronim? Does he mean shalom alecha Rebbe or shalom alecha Rebbe umori? Either way, it's going to be longer than that. So halach l'maisa, Shabbos he only asked after the fact. Probably the best thing to do would have been to eat it and assume the mechila, and then pay back later. Good. So that was our shayla. Okay.